The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the show. I'm Adrian Healy, back from a loan spell in the lower divisions, as my good friend Dan Thomas likes to say. A lot to get to today. Stefano Fusaro joining us from the bubble in Orlando. Big news as a big team and a big player have pulled out of the tournament. Sid Lowe with all the very latest on La Liga. Jan Agafjordtoft will also join us and talk a little Kai Havertz and his future. We'll start, though, in the Premier League, and certainly an air of the mundane about Spurs beating Everton. It was a Michael Keane own goal, 1-0 it finished to Jose Mourinho's men against Carlo Ancelotti. That wasn't the main talking point, though, as we welcome in Stevie Nicol and Craig Burley to the show. Let's start with what happened, gentlemen, as the teams went off at halftime. Son and Hugo Lloris getting into it a little bit as the Spurs players left the field. Hugo Lloris, the Spurs captain, really seemed to be the aggressor. Craig, what did you make of it? And have you ever seen anything like this publicly between players from the same team?
I really don't get this. And I know this is not what you want to hear, because we're struggling for content at the moment, particularly when we see such a garbage game like that. But at least, unless Hugo Lloris has put Son in the trunk of his car and taken him and thrown him off a cliff to his death, I don't really see what the issue is here. Stevie and I, we used to see this every week on the field. And the fact that every man and his dog seems to want to make it a story, I think just tells you more about the game. So, quite frankly, players arguing on a football field or any sports arena, it is the norm. And if anyone thinks it's not the norm, go and stick your head outside the house, for God's sake, and get some fresh air.
Stevie? Is it the norm?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a game goes by where two players don't fall out. Now, you don't always see it the way we did today with Lloris and Son, but it's going on all the time. There are players, you know, having a go at each other verbally all the time. And I mean, generally, it does happen in the dressing room. I've seen it happen in the dressing room 1,000 times. It's just very rare that you see it on the field of play. And so I guess because your supporter and certainly your TV audience in particular, people that don't go to games, they never see it, because it generally happens in the dressing room. So when it does come up, it's a big thing for them. But when you're involved in it and when you're being a professional in it, you know that actually it's a little unusual if there's not a couple of guys having a little go about something.
Mm. What about Spurs in general? What can we say about them, Craig? Because they've been nothing if not mediocre under Jose Mourinho. Where do they go from here? Seems to be
I'll say the same thing about them as I'll say about everyone. I'd rather stick needles in my eyes. Those players should be made to go and watch a replay of that game twice, and once again on Sunday for good measure after they've played it the weekend. You and I did a game the other week, Spal versus Calgary, and it was bad. I'd rather go and watch a rerun of that. Two teams fighting it out, certainly one of them in the relegation threatening zone in Serie A. Here we have two teams that were, you know, one team was in the Champions League final not too long ago. Another side, Everton, with a proud history, who just seemed to be going through managers like hot dinners. And if you looked at their side today, if you looked at their midfield, my God, the players that they once had compared to what Ancelotti is going to have to work with is quite frightening. As for Tottenham, this should be no surprise, Adrian. This should be no surprise. They don't have any fluidity. There's no pace about their game. The goal came about from a deflection. They created very little else. It got a little better in the second half, and I say a little better. But quite frankly, as a spectacle of two of the bigger teams in the Premier League in England, it was an utter embarrassment.
Mm. Stevie, as Craig mentioned, you can't help but think where they were a year ago and where they now are, and what lies ahead. I mean, there are clearly players who aren't going to perform for Jose Mourinho on current evidence.
Well, the truth is, actually, the same group of players really weren't performing at the end either. In fact, ever since they've played in that Champions League final, you know, Pochettino struggled at the start of the year and he ended up getting the bullet because of it. And I don't think it's going to change because I don't, you know, Heung-Min Son and Lucas Moura, to me, are better individuals. They do things on their own. You know, they're not particularly great, in my opinion, at linking together. And they certainly don't link enough with Harry Kane. And so previously, when Harry Kane had the likes of Dele Alli playing along with him, you know, Harry would come and Dele would get in the box, and then you had Christensen picking passes for Harry Kane and playing with him. He doesn't have that now. He's got either Lo Celso and Lamella as his number 10. Now, I'm sorry, they both work hard and they both try very hard, but they're not number 10s in any team, any proper team. And so when you've got Harry Kane not receiving a ball from his number 10, and you've got two guys beside him who really are more interested in doing stuff individually, then you wonder, why is there no cohesion? The fact is, they need to get themselves a player in the middle of the park that's going to connect everything, and particularly Harry Kane, because the longer this goes on, Harry Kane's going to get the white handkerchief out and say, I'm off, I can't stand any more of this.
Craig, they've clearly got many talented players who've been playing way below their best for far too long, and yet they're not going to have any money to spend this summer. The whole situation with the stadium and obviously post-pandemic, it's not going to be new signings arriving, is it?
No, but you say many talented players, you know, I suppose in some people's eyes, maybe. But, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Aurier. I'm not a huge, and that's only me personally, I'm not a huge fan of Dier. Davis isn't bad. Lo Celso isn't bad. I think Winks is okay. Moura is a flash in the pan with his pace. He'll do something brilliant and then you'll not see him and he'll just make mistakes. He's a very, very good player, Son, but he's under performing at the moment. Sissoko's a worker. Lamella is a fancy Dan when he comes off the bench. And Harry Kane's a world-class striker playing an average side. So I think that about sums it up for me. I've got to say, we've got two managers here who a lot of people are looking at. And I know Ancelotti has done a decent job since he's come in. But we have two managers here who a lot of people are looking at, and they're looking at other coaches around other leagues and saying, is this style going to work? And is it still relevant to today's footballers? And that is going to be the big question going forward, because we know what Everton do. They get Richarlison and they get Calvert-Lewin up front, and on the day, they'll get it forward early and they'll use their pace and their power. That's a little bit old school. Now, if Everton have got funds, and that's a big if, Ancelotti might be able to change that, or he's going to have to change it himself with the way he plays. But we know Mourinho's unlikely to change. So the big question is not just the squads at these two clubs, but the managers, and can they get more out of what they've got without going out and bludgeoning the budget? And I think certainly from Tottenham's perspective, the answer at the moment is a huge no.
You just said it, Craig. Harry Kane, world-class player on an average team. Is it time to go?
Yes, because if I sit down with Mourinho and Daniel Levy, if I'm Harry Kane, they say, talk to me. Talk to me about where we're going to get better and how we're going to get better. How are we going to bridge that gap? There's a huge gap to the top two, in particular the top one. And how are we going to be able to do that to satisfy me as arguably, behind Lewandowski, one of the best, if not the backup best striker to Robert Lewandowski when fit, natural number 9. How the hell, Stevie, are they going to convince Harry Kane to stay at Tottenham Football Club unless he just doesn't want to go and says, no, I'm happy at Tottenham, I want to stay here? That's fine. If it's a personal decision, that's fine. If it's a football decision, in my opinion, Stevie, there's no choice, surely.
Stevie?
No. It's 100% a personal choice, because Harry Kane knows how it works there. He knows Levy's not going to go Well, number one, they're already saying they don't have money. Number two, even if and when they've had money, they haven't gone out and bought players. So this is 100% not a professional decision whatsoever, because if it's a professional decision, Harry Kane gets himself out of there as soon as possible before his head goes, you know, before it really starts affecting him. So if Harry wants to be, he's one of our own for the rest of his life, then he will stay. And if he wants to win Premier Leagues or Champions Leagues or any of the big prizes, then he has to go. And he has it all in his hands. It really is down to him. Personal, stay.
Yeah.
Professional, get on your bike as soon as possible.
No, he needs to get out of there, I think, Adrian. And listen, if I was Gareth Southgate, and you know, I'm not quite as anti-English as Mr. Nicol there, but you know, looking ahead as a
oh, not at all. Excuse me.
What?
I'm not at all biased towards my good friends are the English.
Well, listen, if I was Gareth Southgate, I'd be a touch worried, because here we have a year down the line to the Euros. He's got a super talented bunch of young players, particularly forward players, midfield to front. And he's got a striker who I think under Mourinho, and he can trot out all the stats he wants about the previous strikers that he's had and blah, 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 who is starting to look. And I'm sorry, Tottenham fans, but if you don't admit this, then you've got the blinkers on and you're pulling the wool down over your eyes. He's looking more demoralised by the game. Mm. And the more frustrating he gets...
Do you know, Craig? Do you remember his face after he scored that goal? I think it was West Ham at the end of the game. He ran 60 yards and scored. Now, we're saying he's a world-class centre-forward. He's a world-class football player. Have you ever seen a more relieved look on somebody's face when he scored that goal to make it 2-0, I think it was, against West Ham in the last minute? I mean, that tells you how he's feeling. When he is the happiest man alive for a few seconds because he scored the goal against West Ham, how frustrating must he feel?
It's no different, Adrian, for Aubameyang at Arsenal and Arsenal fans and Harry Kane at Tottenham. And all the teams that are not doing particularly well, who have top players, no different. No different. They're all getting asked the same question. How are you going to hang on to them? How are you going to hang on to your best players? How are you going to keep them there? How are you going to get a new contract for Aubameyang to help these kids? How can you convince them? How can you? And he's in his 30s. You know, Harry Kane's in his prime. He's got the Euros to think about. He's got the next 5 or 6 years of his career to think about. You can't be superseded by somebody else in your position by just sitting tight and waiting for it to happen. So at this current juncture, I think, and on the playing squad alone, Tottenham Hotspur are not in a position, in my opinion, to convince Harry Kane that they're going to be giving him the platform he needs going forward to be successful in terms of trophies and be successful in terms of an individual. They've gone backwards.
Yeah.
Right? There's no doubt about it. They've gone backwards this year, and that's a huge worry.
Good stuff, guys. Well, the position Spurs are in is up to 8th. The heady heights of 8th. European football is still very much a distant possibility in the Premier League.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Less than 48 hours until MLS is back. The tournament in Orlando set to get underway Wednesday night. Stefano Fusaro is our man in the Orlando bubble. Stefano, thanks for joining the show for a few moments. MLS's worst nightmare, I think, has come to fruition in the last few hours. The confirmation that FC Dallas will not be able to be a part of this tournament at all. I know you've been close to their camp. How did it all unfold from your perspective?
Well, yeah, the entire traveling party of FC Dallas has been quarantined for 7 days now after the positive coronavirus test to 10 players and one coach. Those players have been isolated in another wing of the hotel. But yeah, they won't be playing part of this in this tournament. And I did speak to the head coach, Luchi Gonzalez, just yesterday about what would have been their start date, their new start date for this tournament, July 15th, after their first game was postponed. And he quickly said, well, I don't know what date that's going to be because my concern is the health and safety of my players. So he was almost hinting at the fact that this might be a situation that we would have. And of course, we saw Commissioner Don Garber on SportsCenter confirming that just a little bit ago.
Mm. Stefano, so that's a team not involved in the tournament, a high-profile player who's not going to be involved either. Carlos Vela, he confirmed that today. Pretty much news most of us expected. What's been the reaction down there?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the worst-kept secret so far in the MLS's back tournament that Carlos Vela isn't going to be participating. From my reporting, he, as we know, is expecting a child. And when these positive coronavirus tests did come to light here inside the bubble, Vela decided to not participate, and it really is something that you can't blame him for. This is a situation that is unprecedented, and we can't blame somebody for not wanting to play and put themselves in a certain amount of risk to be playing in this tournament. And I spoke to another player currently here inside the bubble, a very popular player, who did speak about Vela and about other players not deciding not to play in this tournament.
I respect a decision, because first of all, then a player, then a sportman, we are human. So there is a time where we are not comfortable to be away from home as before, and he had a family, he wanted to take care of his family, we respect. But I also respect everyone who are here making a sacrifice for this tournament and for them families as well, because I believe a lot of players that are here because they need to be here to secure them future, the future of them life, them families. And it is a decision we can support each other, and because this moment permits that.
So Nani, obviously, with his thoughts on Carlos Vela as he continues to get ready for that opening night game, Orlando City versus Inter Miami.
Stefano, it's an opening night. There's only 48 hours away. We're wondering exactly what it's going to look like because the second half of that doubleheader, Nashville and Chicago, reports emerging that that game is in jeopardy because of Nashville's problems.
Yeah, we reported that last night that sources tell us that the Nashville-Chicago game, the second half of that doubleheader, will be postponed. And that's due to Nashville. Nashville has not been able to train yet since they arrived here in the Orlando bubble due to positive coronavirus tests. As soon as they arrived here, when we went through the normal protocol of being tested the second they arrived here, so they haven't even been able to train. And without training, the league is not going to make them get on a field in 95-degree weather with 90% humidity here in Orlando after not even being able to train yet.
Mm. Stefano, sooner or later, you're going to be able to talk about some football. So keep up the good work down there. Stay safe. In terms of opening night, what we can tell you is we will for sure have the Florida Derby, Orlando City and Inter Miami meeting for the very first time. That kicks off the MLS's back tournament, 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. Well, the headlines in the Spanish papers say it all. There is life. Barcelona springing back to life with that 4-1 scintillating victory against Villarreal at El Madrigal. Let's welcome in Sid Lowe to the show for the first time. Sid, what a difference a week makes. A week ago, we were all writing off Barcelona. Messi was leaving, Suarez was old, Griezmann was no good, Setien was out of his depth. Where did this come from?
Well, look, I mean, in a way, this came from the fact that they have lots of very good players, even if those are players, in the case of Suarez, who are getting a bit old, in the case of Messi, who is furious with the club, in the case of Griezmann, someone who's had a very difficult first season. These are still really, really good footballers. Now, of course, the fit for these three playing together has been very difficult. And what shifted in this game was the formation. So you had Barcelona playing much more narrow. You had all three of those players playing kind of inside. So you effectively had Suarez and Griezmann as forwards with Messi just behind them in a much more orthodox number 10 role. Now, he always plays, of course, with a degree of freedom and all across the pitch, but this was very, very central and it worked really, really well. But here's the thing. It worked really well in one game. It worked really well at a point at which, frankly, it's too late. You know, that headline, as you say, there is life. Well, there is life in this team, maybe, but there isn't really life in the league title race. They're 4 points behind Real Madrid. Real Madrid can afford to lose. They can afford to draw twice and would still win the league. And so, as Quique Setién put it after the game, he said this was a really good performance, but it's one we could have done with before.
You mentioned the change in formation, Sid, and that's the thing that's got everyone talking. It seems so obvious on paper, but what was the genesis of this change and where did it come from? Did it come from Quique Setién? Did it come from Messi and the players? Did it come from outside pressure or all of the above?
Well, look, it comes from a couple of things. And one thing it's worth bearing in mind is that in the previous game when Griezmann was left on the bench and didn't come on until the 90th minute, they also played this sort of formation. They played with a fairly narrow midfield diamond. So one at the base, two to either side and one as a number 10. Now, in that game against Atletico Madrid, it was Ricky Puig who played in that position. This time around, it was Messi who played in that position. And it's also something that they've employed a couple of times over the course of the year. And again, I don't want to be the big party pooper here, but I think it's worth noting which opponents this came against. The Villarreal side have been playing very, very well, but maybe lacked some of the aggression, allowed Barcelona to play, didn't put pressure on the passing from slightly deeper, and allowed Messi the room to do this, which probably he wouldn't have had if they'd done exactly the same formation against, say, Atletico Madrid, against, say, Real Madrid, against Sevilla, against Celta, teams that they've dropped points to. And so while I think that it's important in a way, because it does perhaps suggest a way forward, I think it's important too when reading between the lines, it feels like this is some of the pressure's been put on Setién to do this, or at the very least he's felt freed up to try something that maybe before he didn't want to. The fact that it worked for the three players may encourage them into believing this is a way forward for the future. But of course, in terms of this league season, there is no future. I mean, genuinely, there is no future now for Barcelona in terms of this league season. Of course, what we're all forgetting about, and I think in part we're forgetting about this because it's been so long since we've played it, and it's going to be so long until we do play it, is the league finishes on the 19th. On the 12th, in other words, almost a month later, the Champions League starts up. It will be a three-game sprint for the Champions League, obviously assuming that Barcelona get through in that isolated second leg that they've still got to play against Napoli, assuming that Real Madrid get through against Manchester City. There will be a three-game sprint for the Champions League. And so I wonder now if Setién is looking at this and thinking, OK, how do I prepare a team in a month so that we have the best possible chance to win in that kind of mini Champions League tournament that will go ahead in Lisbon?
And do you think, Sid, that this rejigged look at Barcelona that we had yesterday, do you think that will be the way? You talked about moving forward in the Champions League. Can this work? Will Messi be happy with this in the Champions League?
Look, I think if you can convince Messi that this can work, he'll be happy with it. I don't think he has any problem playing at number 10. I think he quite enjoys it. My doubts with this formation, and look, I always say this from the perspective that you know, you're talking now to a journalist, not a former player. So of course, when you talk to Frank Leboeuf or to Xhaka or to Stevie, then it's different. But I look at this and I still think that leaves them really quite vulnerable. I think it's nice to see those three players in positions in which it can work, although I think in part it has to be intuitive to make sure they don't tread on each other's toes. But I also think it leaves them very, very, very open at the back. And despite the fact that against Villarreal, they scored four and they could genuinely have scored eight or nine, they also could have conceded three or four. And I just wonder about that kind of approach in the Champions League against teams, and I hate to say this because I've really enjoyed watching Villarreal play this year, but against teams who are frankly quite a lot better than Villarreal are.
Well, you mentioned the number four, Sid, and that is definitely the key number in terms of La Liga. I want to bring you back to that because 4 points the difference between the two teams, Real Madrid and Barcelona, four games to go. Let's address what the Barcelona president had to say about VAR recently. Since the league restarted, VAR has not been very fair, and that's been having an effect on results, and it seems it always favours the same team. And many teams have been disadvantaged as a result. VAR should help referees, but in the images everyone has seen in recent weeks, it's not been fair. So, newsflash, Sid, Barcelona president having a thinly veiled dig at Real Madrid. Is there any validity to Bartomeu's point?
Right. Okay. So you've used the word validity. So I think because you've used the word validity, my answer probably has to be no. That said, I can understand this. Now, I can understand it from his personal point of view, which is that he's under an enormous amount of pressure. And in part, of course, he, as the president who has overseen a very significant institutional crisis at the club, who's seen the club's waste a huge amount of money and not succeed in the Champions League now for 5 years, and now give up a La Liga crown, which had looked like it was theirs, he's looking for somewhere to hide, in part. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it, slightly in defence of him, is to say that he did point out that this is since the restart, and that since the restart, it appears that a team is being favoured. Now, let's try and unpack this. I think it's important that he's saying only since the restart. I think that if you look at the way that VAR has behaved since the restart, it has been absolutely baffling at times. And also, of course, when you look at it in terms of the kind of the headline decisions, of course, we focus on the biggest clubs. And it is true, and wait, I've got to kind of finish this before I kind of end on what seems like a very, very decisive statement. It is true that Real Madrid have had a lot of decisions go their way that have been questioned. So, for example, the offside against Rodrigo Moreno against Valencia, the decisions in the Real Sociedad game. There was a penalty against Getafe this weekend. They got a penalty against Athletic Bilbao. There was a possible penalty for Athletic that wasn't given. But here's the big thing. There is a difference between there being a series of results going in a team's favour and this is a key point, those decisions being wrong. Yes, there have been decisions going around in his favour, and quite a lot of them. But most of them, I think, if we went through them one by one and ignored, if you like, the sense that a lot is happening at once, most of those decisions, or all of them, can be justified, and I would say most of them are correct. The only game where I really have significant doubts is one we've talked about before, which was that Real Sociedad game, where I think there's three decisions there that are questionable. I personally would say that one of them is right, one of them is okay, and one of them is wrong. So even then, you're only talking about one. And so look, I mean, I can understand why. I can understand why he looks at it. I can understand why he feels it. But I think it's really important to differentiate between have decisions been going in Real Madrid's favour? Well, yes. Does that mean those decisions are necessarily wrong? No.
Sid, you took the wind out of my sails. I was all set to tee you up to say, is this still a title race? 4 games, 4 points, are Real Madrid going to drop any points? But clearly, you think no race at all, no?
Well, I mean, look, I think there is no race. To be honest, I thought there was no race even before Atletico played Barcelona at the Camp Nou last week, which of course ended in a draw. Look, let's put this in mathematical terms as much as we possibly can. It's a 4-point lead plus head-to-head goal difference. In other words, if they finish level, if Barcelona can somehow claw back 4 points on Real Madrid will still win the league. There are 4 games to go. They need to lose one and draw one, lose one and draw one. They could draw twice and they would still win the league. They've won 7 in a row since the return. We're now asking them to mess it up twice in 4 games. It's just not going to happen.
It does seem to be asking rather a lot, doesn't it? Good stuff, Sid. And stick around as well. Sid will be with us on Extra Time. He'll have Shaka for company answering your questions.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, fresh off yet another domestic double, news out of Bayern Munich. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge is saying they are not going to be in the market for Kai Havertz. We have a really big financial challenge ahead of us, he said. Even if we wanted the player, we could not finance it this year. Let's welcome into the show Jan Agafjortoft. Jan, Surprising, perhaps, that Bayern aren't going to have the financial muscle to go after Kai Havertz, having just played against him in the DFB Pokal. That appears to leave Chelsea as the front runners. Reports are there's been no official offer made as of yet, but clearly the player and his management are expecting one.
Well, first of all, when Karl-Heinz Rummenigge says a thing like that, it could also be strategic, because we know, although there is the 51 rule, meaning that there can't be foreign investors and other investors involved to have the control at the club, Bayern will have the financial muscles. What they tried to do is to lower the expectation of Bayer Leverkusen. Of course, by COVID-19, the market has changed a bit. And then Kai Havertz and his team will look around. Who is in there for me? Real Madrid, Barcelona is always temptation for any German players. Liverpool have said, well, wait, we have no money at the moment. So this is leaving us to go to Chelsea. Chelsea already had Rüdiger telling Werner, please come here to Stamford Bridge. There's a revolution going on. Frank Lampard will take us to the big mountains. And I can imagine that there's the same thing going on again. But I think that the expected price of over 100 million euro, that won't happen in this market. And that's why I think that Karl-Heinz Rummenigge wants to tell his mate, Rudi Völler, at Leverkusen, we can take him, but not for that price. No chance whatsoever. But don't put Bayern Munich out of this race yet.
Interesting, Jan. Very interesting. But if it was to be Chelsea, theoretically at least, how would he fit in there? There's so much young attacking talent. Two more players coming that they've just signed this summer. What? How's it all going to shake out?
Reminds me of some years ago when Osvaldo Ardiles played with five strikers, didn't it? Well, they were scoring goals for fun, trouble going backwards, and the offensive department of Chelsea for next year looking fantastic. But I think you have to have the balance in the team as well, so I expect more signings from them. But Kai Havertz is a different type of all the candidates in this transfer market. He's a kind of Michael Ballack kind of player, and remember Michael Ballack of course played for Chelsea. He has also said to Kai Havertz, please go to my former club, having played for Bayern Munich as well. He has to be loyal somewhere, and he's choosing to do that in London. But I think he will fit in very well, because this is, like I said, a different kind of player. He could balance that midfield going forward, going into the striking part of it. But you see, they mean business now, Chelsea. They 1 year without any transfers, so now they're going for it.
Yeah, and moving on today, we saw the relegation promotion playoff, Werder Bremen and Heidenheim. Werder Bremen making life very interesting, but crawling across the finishing line in the end. 2-2 draw, going through on away goals. They will stay in the Bundesliga. What did you make of it?
Well, it was interesting because this was a relegation playoff. The first game in Bremen, 0-0. They got a captain sent off, Werder Bremen, had to play without him in Heidenheim. Heidenheim, a fantastic home team in the second league on German football. But they got off to a terrible start. Teuerkauf making one of the most bizarre own goals of the season, 1-0 behind. And then there were a lot of chances, the two clearances off the line, Heidenheim. Your sergeant came one against the goalkeeper, didn't score you. And you've got a feeling that they will kind of punish Werder Bremen doing that. And Klein Deans made it then 1-1, but it still needed one more goal. But it wasn't to be, because Werder Bremen scored. Augustinsson scored 2-1. And the penalty then in the 97th minute was just a makeup of the game. And Werder Bremen, it's a big club in Germany. They're winning the trophies many times. They're winning the European Cup. They've been out of the Bundesliga just once since the start in 1963. And what a big relief for that club, because we have seen with Stuttgart and Hamburger Sportverein and other clubs going down in the second league, it's unbelievably hard to get out of that. And now for all the green-white fans all around the world, they will be very, very relieved today.
And it is massive news for American fans too, Jan, because it means Josh Sargent can stay in Bremen, can stay in the Bundesliga. From what you've seen of him, can he still come good in the top flight in Germany? He had a tough year this year, didn't he?
He has, but any striker in that Werder Bremen this season will have a problem. I'm happy that Kofeld chose him today. I think he did well. I think he held up the ball very good. I've talked to a lot of sport directors in Germany. I think that even if they went down to the second league, he would have stayed in the Bundesliga. A lot of clubs interested in him. He will have a bright future. It was hard for him, like I said, when you're playing for a team always being in the relegation zone. It's hard for a striker. I know that. I've been there more or less all my life as a striker, down in the relegation zones, I feel. So it's hard, but it went well for him. And now in Werder Bremen, it's a good place to develop. I can't see Werder Bremen accepting one more year in that zone. So I think that would be good for him. And I think also for the kid, it's a good place to be, Bremen. It's a good place to develop as a football player. They have a proven record that they can make good players great. So I think for all US soccer, that is good news that they stay there and he can stay in Werder Bremen to keep on his developing his career.
So that is it. The German domestic campaign comes to an end. We saw Bayern, of course, finish with yet another double, that impressive Pokal victory against Bayer Leverkusen. And now, Jan, they have this awkward situation, this gap of 4 or 5 weeks that they've got to fill in before the Champions League recommences. What do you understand are their plans for this month while other teams are still playing?
Well, what we do know before the Champions League is quite interesting because some of the teams then had 6-7 weeks off, they didn't even meet up. I mean, in Germany, they kind of got things going. PSG going in there as well. They won't play any competitive game before the Champions League tournament in Lisbon. I think that what Bayern, I think there isn't, I mean, a German team like Bayern, you wouldn't worry about what they will do. They will take some days off now to kind of enjoy the double. They're not allowed to celebrate with their fans, but still they can do that later. So they will come back then and have a mini pre-season kind of thing, and then they will probably play some friendlies and they'll be fit and ready for the Champions League. Having said that, I mean, it's of course a disadvantage when you see the other team because you are in kind of the rhythm of the competitiveness in there. So but if there's one team in the world, if there's one football nation in the world that I think will find the best solution is Bayern, it's Germany.
Mm. Finally, Jan, Germany's been first country to finish. You tweeted earlier that there'll be maybe another first coming. They may be the first league to welcome crowds back officially when the Bundesliga kicks off again in September. What do you understand is the case here?
Well, I understand now that they are discussing how they're going to do this gradually to get the fans into the stadium again. Remember, the reason, because Germany could start football again and more or less save the football season all over the world, is that the government, the governing bodies of Germany, has done a terrific job in terms of COVID-19. And that is the same thing now. And Germany is shared into 16 different regions. And there was the first sign now that the regions were RB Leipzig are in, they allowed the club more or less saying officially that you can have half of your capacity into the stadiums. And I talked to some other clubs today and they're saying they have the same conversation with their Bundesländer, so that is regions, and the regions in Germany, they have the last words on all health issue. So it's a good sign, and it's a good sign for other nations as well. But first of all, the nation got to sort out the COVID-19 system because, as we know, we have to respect that virus, and then hopefully we can get the fans back in the football grounds again. And if you have 60,000 capacity in a stadium, of course you can still have the rules. You can still have the, what in Europe, more or less every country have, they have this 1 meter rule that you have to stay away from each other. So I think it's all about organization, and it's all about having a good conversation with the governing bodies.
Terrific stuff. That would be really positive news, Jan, if that comes to fruition. Now, thanks for joining us. I'm going to work on you to get that Swindon Town shirt hung up behind you. That's for next time. Well, Jan, fans or no fans, we'll be covering the Bundesliga 7 days a week on the show and the new home for the Bundesliga right here on ESPN.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, that's your lot for today. I'm off on loan again for another few months. Thanks to all the people on the show today, Craig, Stevie, Stefano, Jan. I think I've remembered everyone. Sid Lowe and Shaka Hislop coming up next on Extra Time. And away we go. My first time back in the Extra Time chair for quite a while. I intend to make the most of it. Shaka and Sid for company. Gentlemen, big Spanish theme to the questions today. Can't be any coincidence to that. Sid, will Real lose their second leg Champions League game fixture against Manchester City, or can a possible comeback happen? What do you think?
I mean, look, the most likely scenario, I suppose, is given the lead that they have and the lead having won away from home as well, that Manchester City will feel that they're well placed to go through. But I think we have learned, haven't we, over the last 5 or 6 years, never to assume that Real Madrid won't progress in the Champions League. You know, that when they won the Champions League 3 years in a row, in all three of those seasons, I mean, perhaps less so in the second of the three, but in all three of those seasons, there were times all the way through where it felt like they were on edge. And somehow they always found a way. Somehow they always seemed to just get through it. Whether it was that they trusted that the moment would arrive, whether they got a little bit lucky at times, whether they defended really well, whether there was kind of a taste for the epic and the heroic, and they kind of enjoyed that sense that they were on edge. They always found a way. There's a couple of other reasons, I suppose, to say that this is still possible. One is that we're a very long way off. I mean, it feels like, because we're finishing these seasons quickly, it feels like we're right on it. But of course, we've got a while to go still before that happens. Then, of course, you have the, if you like, the kind of Champions League mini tournament from the 12th of August, which is almost a month away still. Is it possible? It's absolutely possible that Real Madrid turn this round, not least because this is Real Madrid and this is the Champions League. And in the Champions League, when Real Madrid are involved, strange things tend to happen.
They do, don't they? Shaq, are you putting any of your money on this, or any of Stevie Nichols' money?
I put some of Stevie Nichols' money on it. If I were to put any money in it, it'd be on City. But to the question, of course it's possible that Real Madrid turn this around. Coming off the break, they've won, what, 7 on the spin. And you've seen City look fantastic. And at the same time, we've also seen them look a little bit mediocre. So who knows exactly where this one will go. But right now, I still think this is City's tie to lose. So if I'm putting Stevie's money on it, that's where I'm going.
Sid, Frank has three young players he wants you to run the rule over, and asks which has the better future out of these three, Odegaard, Kubo, or Fati. What do you think?
Right, starting with the, if you like, the kind of the disclaimer that I'm going to throw in at the very start here, which is to say that Odegaard is a little bit older than the other two. Not by much, but yeah, a little bit older, at least 3 years older, I think, than Fati, and I think a year and a half or maybe just about 2 years older than Kubo. I think Odegaard has been, if only because he's a reality already. You know, I think this season in Spain, you can genuinely make a case, I must say this actually, until the restart. And since the restart, he's struggled a bit for form, although he provided a couple of assists in the last game. I feel like he's been the outstanding player in Spain this season, perhaps with Benzema, Messi and Casemiro. I think he's been absolutely brilliant. And I think we've seen things from him that are really, really exciting. I think from Fati, we've seen moments of excitement, but kind of moments where he hasn't either had opportunities or hasn't always reached that level. Part of the problem with him, of course, was that he was so brilliant from the very, very first game. Kubo, I think, has taken a little bit longer, which I actually think is a good thing. And I think bit by bit, he's found his feet. I think Mallorca have been very patient with him. But to give you a one-word answer, rather than a very long-winded one, Odegaard.
OK. Shaka, Barcelona's display yesterday has everyone all a Twitter. Are they back? Shaka takes it one step further. Can this Barcelona, given how they played against Villarreal, pull a miracle he calls it that, in the Champions League and actually win it?
Certainly, they have the tools to win it. Messi continues to astound. That hasn't changed. Most importantly, Luis Suarez, over the last couple of games, is starting to show the kind of form that we normally associate with Suarez. And as good a goal as it was from Griezmann yesterday, we are talking about Griezmann, who's seen more lows than highs since his arrival in Barcelona. Can Suarez and Messi continue in this form and pull it off? Yes, but that's asking a lot on the shoulders of Lionel Messi, and a consistency from Suarez that, as much as we've seen it over the last two games, we haven't seen it for quite some time.
Said to go from Barcelona possibly winning the Champions League to Antony perhaps redressing the balance, asking which La Liga team is in a bigger mess, in your opinion, Barcelona or Valencia?
Cool. I was wondering who you were going to put up there as a candidate alongside Barcelona, because they're in such a mess. It was hard to imagine a team in as much of a mess as them. Yeah, Valencia are in a mess. So, by the way, are Espanyol, a club who are basically down now after 27 years in the top flight. Valencia are a mess. It feels like fixing Valencia is very difficult. But I guess the answer is still Barcelona, if only because Barcelona, the expectation levels are so much higher. And of course, everything we look at and everything we analyse, we always analyse it as kind of expectation against reality. Objectively, Valencia are in a worse condition. But Barcelona, of course, expect to be in so much better, in so much a better place than this. That said, I mean, to link this a little bit with a question that you asked Shaka a minute ago, Barcelona are three games away, potentially, from the Champions League. And I think the Champions League is a competition this year that could probably be won by any of the teams that get into that three game kind of mini tournament in Lisbon. And so I guess Barcelona are not a million miles away from redemption still.
Mm. It cannot, however, be won by Liverpool. To switch the question to them, Shaka, which is the better move for Liverpool, taking Coutinho back or signing Thiago?
I don't think you take Coutinho back. I just don't feel you revisit a player like Coutinho, as good as he was for you. I don't think he's replicated that form anywhere he's been. And just given the circumstances around his departure to Barcelona, which you totally understand, I just think as a club, you don't go back there. Thiago, at the same time, has been simply outstanding for Bayern. If you had to go one of those two routes, easily, Thiago.
Sid, you see it the same way? There's two players with Barcelona connections.
Yeah, I do. I also to look at it from the point of view of what it is that Liverpool want. I think the attraction of Thiago is the awareness that next season teams will play differently against Liverpool, that they're much more likely. Let's simplify this. It's oversimple, but let's simplify it. Liverpool are much more likely to come across park buses next season. And I think what they want, therefore, is a midfielder that plays from a little bit deeper than Coutinho does, who can find that one or two or three passes a game that opens a really, really tight defence. And I think that's why they're going for a player who gives them a different type of quality to the other midfielders. Now, obviously, Coutinho gives that a little bit, but he performs better in the position of one of the front three. That, I don't think, is where they're looking to strengthen. I think they're looking to strengthen for a different type of midfielder that gives them variation, that gives them a plan B, that gives them something transformative in the middle of the pitch. And so that's the answer. For what it's worth, I also think Thiago is just a better player.
Yeah. Sid, one more on Barca from Hislop's Shark Bake, regular provider of questions. For Sid, it's good to have him back, it is. For Sid, why does Piqué continue to get a pass for his subpar defence? At this point, shouldn't Barcelona's two centre-backs be Umtiti and Lenglet?
It's not often that I say this, but I don't agree with the question at all.
Mm.
I think if you look at the three centre-backs they've got this year, Piqué has been, for my liking at least, the best of them. I like the steadiness of Longley, but I worry about him in the very biggest games. Umtiti looks horribly out of shape since that knee injury. I feel really sorry for him because he was absolutely wonderful in his first season at Barcelona, but clearly hasn't got back to anything like the fitness, the sharpness, or even that kind of the mental freshness since then. I think at times Piqué looks worse than he is because he's so exposed, because so much of what Barcelona do leaves that defence exposed. And so I hate to say it, but I just kind of can't even begin to address the question because the premise of it, I think, is flawed.
Well, there you go, Hislop Shark Bake. That's putting you in your place. Shaka, yeah. Shaka, yeah, last one for you. Who's your favourite ESPN writer, asked Kartik, and why is that Sid Lowe?
because he's on and he's a doctor. It's Dr. Yeah. Sid Lowe, have you know, Kartik. And I've learned that you never always do what the doctor says, in short.
Absolutely.
Never argue with Dr. Lowe. Even when you're wearing a Mark Ogden T-shirt, I can see it there underneath you, underneath your shirt. Good stuff, gents. Thanks ever so much. As always, ESPN FC available on your screens 7 days a week.